You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me back.
Any small talk? Thanksgiving.
A nice Thanksgiving, yeah. Yeah. You had an art fair? You went to an art fair? You sold art at an art fair?
Oh my god. You're right. I forgot we haven't done it yet, yes.
We haven't podcast since then.
Yeah, that's right. That was cool.
That kind of launched your interest in more art fairs, outdoor art fairs?
Yeah. Yeah, went way better than I thought it would go. Like, shockingly well.
How many pieces did you sell?
Oh, gosh. 3, 6, 7, 8, 9. Something like 10, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yep. There's outdoor art fairs all over the country. Right?
Yeah. And they, yeah.
And you're going to apply to the biggies.
Mm-hmm.
Which
see
are.
What happens.
La Quinta.
I guess La Quinta.
In Palm Springs.
Yeah.
There's one in Denver. There's one in Park City.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called? Park City, Utah?
Yeah.
Where are the, where,
Sundance.
Sundance is. There's one in Portland.
Yep.
Is that right?
Yep.
So those are 4 you're applying to?
Yes, that's right.
And those aren't necessarily the biggest. Those are just sort of in the region.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drivable.
Drivable, relatively. Yeah, I mean, well.
Yeah. There's some cool ones in Texas, but
calling
it's
Portland drivable,
long.
I mean. That,
you're right. That's not drivable at all.
I mean, it's drivable after like a couple of weeks, but we plan on taking a bit of a road trip anyhow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Texas. But I mean, Texas is as far as Portland practically.
Yeah, what we did find out is apparently Arizona doesn't really have any ranked
fairs. Outdoor art fairs.
Which is like harsh.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Although supposedly the Tubac one is like pretty good, but it's still not in the top 200.
Oh,
like, how
really?
Is that possible?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm learning. If anyone has advice, please message.
But nor does New Mexico, and that's like an art capital.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about a culture of outdoor fairs that don't require galleries to get into them.
Yes.
So they're artist-centric fairs. And I mean, it could be there's a huge gallery-centric fair in Arizona, and I'm sure there is in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think there actually is in Arizona, though. They're trying to make one. I was reading about it.
Oh, they're trying to make one?
I think so, yeah.
And Scottsdale, no
doubt?
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called, but it seems new. But they're trying to be like, you know, Phoenix's Art Basel.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, there's a lot of art in Scottsdale.
Yeah, I know. If I was an investor or like a professional in that way, I would be into like trying to make an art fair happen in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty fun.
Although it seems, remember, I think there was one in Scottsdale, and now it's permanently closed.
Oh.
So I think they did try.
Yeah, really?
I think so.
Ouch.
Yeah. Anyhow, art fairs are cool.
Yeah, we have a lot to learn, but they've been enjoyable.
All right, that was good small talk.
Yes, great.
Wonderful. We're in the midst of section 32. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Of contributions to philosophy of the event. And it's weird. In the middle of this section, there's like a subsection that doesn't have a number, and it just says truth. Then there's a footnote that says CF the grounding. So something about the truth and the grounding, this little subsection is. So we're going to start there in the middle of 32, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting to be back to this book. It's such a wonderful book.
Yeah.
All right, I'm ready to listen.
Truth. What was indicated about it on the occasion of the lectures on the work of art and was conceived as, quote, instituting, is already the consequence of the sheltering which properly preserves the cleared concealed. It is exactly this preservation which first allows beings to be, and indeed as the beings they are and can be, in the truth of the not yet thematized being, and in the way this truth is unfolded. What counts as that which is the present, the actual, to which the necessary and the possible are at first merely related, the usual example from the history of the first beginning.
Yeah, so he references some lectures that he gave on the work of art. There's a book by Heidegger, I can't remember what it's called exactly, but it's basically his sort of aesthetic theory. He might be referring to that book, I'm not sure, but he did often speak about art. And he's even referenced in this book so far, Holderlin and poetry in general, as being, having a special place in the pursuit of Bang. So what was indicated about truth on the occasion of the lectures on the work of art and was conceived as instituting truth, is already the consequence of the sheltering which properly preserves the cleared concealed. So, truth is the sheltering of what, of the cleared concealed. Truth is the sheltering of what opens itself up and then goes away. And it is this preservation which first allows beings to be. So in this preservation of the cleared concealed, beings come to be. And indeed, as the beings they are, they come to be and can be in the truth of the not yet thematized being and in the way this truth is unfolded. So they come to be in the sheltered truth. So kind of a little grid or a mapping here of the way truth or phenomenon, truth, and being interrelate. And then he just has this parenthesis here. What counts as that which is the present, the actual. To which the necessary and the possible are first merely related. So they're not really imbricated or essentialized inside what is. And this is the usual example from the history of the first beginning. So the history of the first beginning very much sees what is as what is present, as what is actual. And Heidegger's going to have an alternative take on that. And I would imagine in his alternative take, the necessary and the possible will be more than merely related. They will be integrated. Mm. Okay, yeah.
So reading this makes me think of, and this might be a really like silly thing to say, but it makes me think of the art.
I hope it is.
What?
I hope it is.
The canopy, the art tent that we put up, because he mentions art, and we just put up, we re-put up the outdoor canopy that we used at the outdoor fair to get some installation photos because we had neglected that. But it made me think of the canopy and sheltering, and then in a way the canopy itself kind of it both it clears and conceals the space in a way, like the space under and within it, which feels like kind of a visual way to think about clearing and concealing, and also just that it's artwork in there, artwork also, I think, both clears and conceals, because it both is sort of saying something and can and taking away something at the same time. So it's kind of an interesting visual, I think, for this idea.
Yeah, I love that. It makes me think that.
And also we're going to like break it down and then it's gone. So then yeah. It's like, was it there? What was it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the canopy or the what is really effectively just a gallery space. Mm. The gallery space enables the appearance of art. Mm-hmm. But then it also conceals it. Mm-hmm. Within the gallery space, and that kind of sheltering, Heidegger seems to be saying, makes it true, makes it a truth, mm-hmm. Which in a sense just, and gives it being. Mm-hmm. So it becomes art by being put in that gallery. Being both cleared and concealed in that space, it comes to be in its truth. That is a really good visual for thinking about the way he's talking about truth. I think the thing that's hard for me to get my mind around a little bit is, so in a sense, the art becomes true art, or becomes the truth of art, or becomes almost verifiable mm-hmm. as art. Mm-hmm.
The canopy.
Yeah, so it's an interesting take on the word true or truth. Mm-hmm. It's a very being-centric. So in other words, in the art, becoming or gaining the being of being art, mm-hmm. that is its truth. Mm-hmm. So truth is different than like, if you say the car is red and the car is red, then you've spoken a truth. This is more of a phenomenal being-centric definition of truth. So it's something.
Yeah, I think if you think of it in terms of the artworks being in it, but also you can just sort of think of it as a canopy that creates a space, and that space being a space of truth with like an interior and I think openness.
What makes it a space of truth? Why is truth an important word to like enter into that picture, into that situation?
I think that it's just a way to visualize truth. It's not. I mean, I think both ways. I mean, making it related to art is interesting as well. But I think it also can just be considered like if you're trying to think about how to clear and conceal at the same time, and how to like make the space and open a space, and like the canopy itself is truth, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And and it's great because he uses this word instituting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you institute art.
Yeah, right. Yes.
And it becomes true because it's instituted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The gallery is an institution. Mm-hmm. If the art was just laying in a pile at the dump, mm-hmm. in a sense,
on your computer and never getting out,
exactly,
which is my issue,
it wouldn't have a truth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be true art.
Yeah.
Okay, exciting. Well, you know, I guess that means that what we talked about at the beginning of the podcast wasn't small talk. You thought it was small talk, talking to the listener.
The sheltering is itself carried out in and as Dasein.
Yeah, which means being there, right?
Yeah.
So the art is being there in the gallery.
Yeah. Right. That happens and gains and loses history. in this steadfast caretaking, which in advance pertains to the event, though scarcely has knowledge of the event. This caretaking, conceived not on the basis of everydayness, but from the selfhood of Dasein, abides in various mutually requisite modes: the fabrication of implements, the instituting of machinations, technology, the creation of works, the acts that form states, and thoughtful sacrifice. In all of these, in each one differently, a pre-forming and co-forming of cognition and of essential knowledge as the grounding of truth. Quote, science, only a remote scion of a determinate permeation of implement production, etc. Nothing autonomous and never to be brought into connection with the essential knowledge of the inventive thinking of being. Philosophy.
Whew. Got a little thick.
Yeah.
But in the beginning there, it was like mesmerizing the way it was like tracking the gallery art metaphor that we started, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So the sheltering is itself carried out in and as Dasein, as a being there, as a conscious being there, as an intentful human being there. That's the gallery that the humans made. That happens and gains and loses history. So it gains history and loses history because it's making history, but its history is also dribbling away from it into the past in the steadfast caretaking, right? Which we do when we set up the gallery, which in advance pertains to the event. Which is in a sense happening because there's going to be an event, though scarcely has knowledge of the event. So you don't even know, like, you don't know who's going to come see the gallery, right?
Or decide to.
What's that?
Who's going to come see it? Who's going to buy? Like
what the event is really going to be like.
Yeah.
This caretaking, setting up the gallery, conceived not on the basis of everydayness, but from the selfhood of Dasein. So not conceived from just mundane activity, but from a determinative self, Dasein force, abides in various mutually requisite modes. So abides, this caretaking exists in different sort of necessary modes. And here are the modes: the fabrication of implements, right?
Yeah.
Right? The instituting of machinations, indeed. The creation of works, the acts that form states. So the doings that create states of being, and thoughtful sacrifice. Maybe that's what your show should be called: Thoughtful Sacrifice. Art is a thoughtful sacrifice, aka unprofitable. No. In all of these, in each one differently, a preforming and co-forming of cognition and of essential knowledge as the grounding of truth. Yeah?
Yeah.
No verb in that sentence.
Yeah.
So in a sense, in all of these, there is, in each one differently, in each of these states, a preforming and co-forming of cognition. So cognition is preforming and co-forming with these things, and of essential knowledge of the grounding of truth. Essential knowledge as to, you know, all of these things require essential knowledge as to how to do them, and thereby you ground the truth. Science is only a remote scion or early indicator. Science is only a remote indicator of a determinate permeation of implement production. Etc. Science, only a remote scion of a determinate permeation of implement production. So I think in a sense, science, or what we might call scientific knowledge or scientific practice, or the scientific method, is just a far off or scant early shoot or indicator of what's going to be a intentful infusion of creating tools, mm-hmm. basically. Nothing autonomous and never to be brought into connection. So science is not autonomous. It's involved in a determinate permeation of implement production. And it is never to be brought into connection with the essential knowledge of the inventive thinking of being, philosophy. There's the important end there. So he's really saying science is not philosophy. Mm-hmm. And there's no philosophy, there's no... And reducing science or converting, reducing philosophy or converting philosophy or formulating philosophy to be just a science is not going to happen because they are different things. Mm-hmm. Philosophy is the sheltering of truth, mm-hmm. and science is just a early indicator of an intentful implement production system. So it's the smell of people about to make tools. Yeah. Cool paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Breaks down something that in a sense has an everydayness, like making art. It's like making art. It's a big paragraph about making art, isn't it? Mm. Mm. Fabricating implements, instituting technologies, creating works, mm-hmm. Forming states of being, making thoughtful sacrifice, mm-hmm. Preforming and co-forming cognition into an essential knowledge that grounds truth or shelters clearing concealing. And it's different than a science. It's a, mm-hmm. it's an inventive thinking of being. Mm-hmm. It's a philosophy. Mm-hmm. Implement production tool. It's not just tool mm-hmm. making. Mm-hmm. There's something a little more spiritual about it. Maybe I don't know if that's the right mm-hmm. word, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Cool paragraph. Go ahead.
Yeah, and it's like interesting that he's like putting truth in art.
Yeah.
That's like interesting.
Yeah, well that is super interesting. I agree, and that's let's call that one of Heidegger's great innovations.
Yeah.
I think that truth and art, or truth and beauty certainly, as we know, had been aligned and brought together, but to talk about truth as in a sense only emerging from art, or emerging only artfully, not logically, not scientifically, is a whole new universe of exploration and possible conceptualization that I think as a philosopher he opened up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. really cool. And we can see in a sense, like, I mean, he directly addresses how one could start to think about truth vis-a-vis art and art as a part of truth through this fabrication of implements, the instituting of imaginations, the creation mm-hmm. of works, all of these things involve truth. Mm-hmm. Yet they are the modes whence art is generated. Mm-hmm. So truth and art have this kind of production connection. Because lastly, you're right, we think of art and truth actually as opposites.
Yeah.
Don't we? The artist of fiction.
Yeah.
But he's in this idea of the sheltering of the cleared concealing and the caretaking that comes from the selfhood of Dasein in its instituting of art, there comes truth. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. cool. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's cool. The sheltering abides not only in modes of production, but just as originally in the mode of reception and encountering the lifeless and the living, stone, plant, animal, human. The being taken back into the self-secluding earth happens here. This happening of Dasein is never something for itself. However, it belongs instead within the kindling of the strife between earth and world and of steadfastness in the event.
Yeah, what mysticism here.
Yeah.
The sheltering abides not only in modes of production. So this sheltering, this putting the cleared concealing into a gallery, right? It exists not only in modes of production. So we don't just shelter via modes of production, but it exists just as originally in the ways that we receive and encounter the lifeless and the living, stone, plant, animal, human. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful sentiment that the sheltering of the cleared concealing through what we could call establishing true art is a mode of production. But that mode can be as originally discovered in how we encounter stones, plants, animals, and humans, nature, life. The being taken back into the self-secluding earth happens here. Getting back in touch with the earth. Mm. This happening of Dasein is never something for itself, however. It's not just something that it does for itself. It belongs instead within the kindling of the strife between earth and world and of steadfastness in the event. It belongs within the sort of furnace and the early fomenting of the struggle between earth and world, which we've talked about as the struggle between nature and imagination, or between self and identity, and of the steadfastness in the event, of remaining steadfast in the face of the event as one attempts to encounter Bang as a Dasein. Yeah. Sweet.
It also makes me think like the mode of reception as being the viewer of the artwork,
mm-hmm.
like the one who's receiving it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because I like this idea that it's as much the production as it is the reception, or that one's not really more than the other.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, that's cool. It reminded me of, to be it also set up a nice harmony of engagement in the soul between the sheltering of art and the establishment of art in places where it can gain a truth and just the experience of being receptive to and being appropriated by living things.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, it's how should I say, it's like it elevates the experience of natural relation to a sublime creative event, which I've always kind of felt it is. And it elevates the creation of art and the presentation of art to a exalted and almost religio tactical inbringing and outtaking through you know, being absorbed into nature and having nature come into you. So yeah,
that's nice.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, that one more thing is there's also something about like the lifeless and the living that I think is really interesting. I'm not really sure where, how. I feel like it kind of relates some to the last section, but we don't necessarily need to get into it, but it's just kind of a interesting, maybe something about the, like, in a way, the respect of like the objects around us or something.
Yeah. Well, and then he says right after that, you get taken back into the self-secluding earth.
Yeah.
So the stone and plant, animal, human, I mean, even if you just start at stone is very much a part of the self-secluding earth. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I like that. I mean, in a sense, it's like the relationship we have to the lifeless, the stone, the object, which then, of course, we convert to art.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice.
Philosophy, to find and make appear the simple sights and native forms in which the essential occurrence of being is sheltered and taken to heart.
Mm. I mean, it could just say art. To find and make appear the simple sights and native forms in which the essential occurrence of being is sheltered and taken to heart. Or it could say being in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Or, yeah, naturing. Yeah. That's beautiful. Okay.
Who is capable of both the most distant gaze into the most concealed essence of being and the most immediate fortunate success of the appearing form of beings that shelter?
So who can look both into the most concealed essence of being and into the most immediate fortunate success of the appearing form of beings that shelter? So in a sense, who can look at the distant, generative, mysterious, in a sense, time-laden, bang space that is the event? Who can look there? Who can see there? Mm. But can also not just get lost in that and still have a gander at the immediate fortunate success of the appearing form of beings? So in a sense, also just see the phenomenal being show that flashes before us all the time. So, and that's nice. I think he's saying, you know, we need to see both. We need to not get too fixated on bang, just like we need to not just get dependent on and superficially dedicated to just beings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How do we create for bang? By leaping ahead into its essential occurrence, the thrusting out of its beings, so that the truth of bang might preserve as an impetus the power of bang to endure historically?
Yeah. That's a good question. I can't help but feel like what he's really asking is, you know, or what he's really kind of challenging us with is this idea that to create for bang by leaping into its essential occurrence, by thrusting out its beings, the beings of Bang, so that its truth comes to preserve as a motivator of its power, you know, it might preserve and endure historically. Like, how can we do it? I think, I feel like he's challenging us to make that the template of our art and thinking, which I very much relate to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, the last bit.
Yeah.
To thinking, there remains only the simplest saying of the plainest image in purest reticence. The future first thinker must be capable of that.
So what he's saying is that true thinking in the future, in his other beginning, will just involve simple sayings of the plainest image in pure reticence. Sounds like a Zen master, yeah. I'd say, right? In a sense, but they, yeah. That's what they do. Yeah. I don't think we should read any farther.
Yeah.
It's a lovely section. Any thoughts about it? As you were reading it, did you think, oh yeah, that's my art process. Not the gallery stuff, but like... Like, where do your images come from?
Yeah.
And it's not even really where your images come from. It's as we know, or as I know, you generate thousands and thousands of images through your process, but only some speak to you. Only some seem to be, for some very mysterious reason, good.
Yeah.
Even though I'm not sure you could even explain why some are good and some are not. I mean, there's so many mysteries in art production. How do we know what a good piece is? Mm-hmm. How do I know when I write a good line? How do I choose one word? Why do I choose one word or one phrase over another? Mm-hmm. Why do you choose one image over another? Mm-hmm. So when I say, where do they come from? I kind of mean like, what's the aesthetic generative principle? When you read this section, I don't know. Did you feel any kind of like insights to that, or what was it? What was it for you?
I like the idea of this being like, I think it could be applied or could be the art process. And I like the idea of it. I'm not sure I can say that like, oh, I naturally do this already, or that this is what, you know, without that, this is what guides me in let's say the selection or the making. I feel like the making is very, I don't know, it's very, I don't know. I'm not sure how to describe how I choose one other than it just looks right.
Sure, sure.
Which is like terrible. No. It's also terrible, but I just don't know how I would describe. But I like this idea. I like, in a way, I feel like what he's talking about is in a way to open that up, right? As opposed to just say something I like, to like think about it in some of these ways, I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
And might kind of open it up and make it feel more like, in a way, graspable, which mm-hmm. is maybe a terrible thing to say, mm-hmm. but like, I just feel like the art creation process for me is really hard to describe. And like, I can get into it, and I do get into it fairly regularly and, you know, fully, but it's not anything I would have, I have any way of putting words to.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I wonder if, when I think about laying down a line of verse, I feel like I'm usually juggling several spaces or dynamic spheres, and they are kind of, there's the sonic, how it sounds, just the way the consonants and vowels bounce in and around and before and after each other, so that the mouth moves in a flowing manner. Mm-hmm. Then there's the meaning, where it's like kind of has maximum reference from minimum representation. Mm-hmm. And then there's the kind of dramatic connections it's making to a nether world of action and energy that it's trying to move forward or move through and perpetuate through the piece. So I think in those three things, sound, meaning, and action or drama, I'd say, there's a through thread or an underlying connection that involves bang an event and a concealing opportunity to shelter truth. Mm-hmm. So I feel like behind all that, or in a sense, like the environment or the conveyor belt or the, I don't know, the landscape that all of that is kind of growing in, to me, reminds me of everything he says about bang and mm-hmm. event and clearing, concealing.
Totally.
Like, those are phrases that seem to describe that place from which my poetry has been coming for a long time. And so then I think,
from which it's coming, and then also
to which it's going, and
yeah, the reception, what it's seeking. As well, I think.
That's right. Yeah, what it's seeking, what's looking at it, what it's looking at, what it's relating with.
Sorry.
Yeah, we'll go ahead.
Can I jump in?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think, I mean, it's something I said about your work a very long time ago, but I do think still holds true, is that often, or I think, and even you've said, other people say this too, just that the process of listening to your work, often there's like a lot of stuff that you don't quite understand, and then there's stuff that you do that comes into incredible clarity. And that's kind of another way to think about clearing and concealing, is that sometimes it feels concealed and sometimes it feels cleared. And then if you read it or listen again, it may be a different part will feel that way.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and I think that's actually cool, because I mean, that's not even just unique to my work. Like, I think that's unique in the experience of art,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right?
That we move in and out of it. Yeah. It calls to us. Sometimes it's dark, sometimes it's light. Different things open up to us at different stages, right? Yeah.
Right.
And so it's a dance, it's a moving back and forth. And in a sense, the art becomes the bang or the event. Yeah, that's very much like a good description of the art experiencing experience, right?
Right, right. So then how, can you talk more about how it is on the creation side of it? How the revealing and concealing works?
What do you mean on the creation side?
Like on the writing side. So let's say that what we just discussed just then was the receptor side, but like.
Well, I was going to say, I think I could relate this to like your artworks, your visual pieces, and to my poetry. I think they're very similar in the way they engage with clearing and concealing in the creative process. And that is that I think, and especially in terms of if we're talking about if you have thousands of pieces and yet, you know, as we cull through them and curate them, only say 50 speak to us. That's the phrase we use, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that with you, with color and shapes and visual visual reference, like what the visuals are referencing, which is always a vast number of things. And with me, it's sound and meaning and what those are referencing.
Yeah.
And that too is a large mix of mysteries and clarities. So, you know, I think your sound, your shapes and your colors resonate with or give birth to or clear or generate a clearing concealing, don't they? Like if we look at a piece and there's shapes and colors, all these meanings are swirling in and out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Things are opening up and then they're going away and then they're mm-hmm. opening up and then they're going away. And I would say that like not only in receiving the piece and choosing which piece has dynamism and vitality and excellence, is there a dependence on a vivacious clearing and concealing reference space. Mm-hmm. But in the creation, what you're trying to do is make something that blossoms or generates or engages with or foments a super dynamic clearing, concealing, transcendent mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. reality. See what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So like, I think we're seeking a clearing, okay. This is what I would say is, as we make creative instances, what is compelling and propelling us to move in one direction versus another, and it's all these super little micro movements, right, is the pursuit through a kind of conceptual sniffing a dynamo of clearing and concealing. Mm-hmm. So if it just clears and then conceals once, mm-hmm. But if it starts clearing, concealing four or five times, and then it's concealing gets cleared, and then it's clearing gets mm-hmm. concealed, and then all of a sudden it's like, then you're like, oh, I'm moving in that direction.
Right.
So we're looking, and you know, in a sense, that is bang in the event. So in a way, when you make a piece that's really great, it's because it is eliciting and producing almost more events than you can even
quantify
or cogitate.
Well, and that's like why art is kind of, well, it's cool to have on your wall because you can each time you look at it, like
exactly.
kind of see something else. That's what.
Exactly. Or as I would say, that's why it's
or cool to
great
make.
To read a poem another time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or see a play for some Shakespeare plays I've seen 10 times.
Yeah.
And
that's
by
what
the way,
we look for in the creation.
There's not a single similarity I could ever. There's not a single sameness that I could ever claim to those experiences.
Right, right, right. That's right.
No Hamlet is like any other Hamlet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right. I mean, that in putting art on the wall, you walk into the room again. There's that same piece. Mm-hmm. But the clearing, concealing of it is different. Different mm-hmm. things are being cleared. Different things are being concealed. And it's interesting enough. That's kind of what I think Heidegger's emphasis on history is. History mm-hmm. is the timely unfolding of clearing and concealing, where clearing mm-hmm. becomes concealed, and then concealed gives room to a different concealing, and then that's concealed again, and then it's clearing, mm-hmm. concealing, clearing, concealing, the cycle of truth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I think...
Please go ahead.
No, I have nothing. Go ahead.
It makes me think about an interview question that I was just asked recently by Annika, and she said, you know, does your art have a message? And my response to that, I think maybe we've discussed it before, but it's always no, that it, because I don't have an intentional message, and now I'm thinking that it's like, well, it's because the clearing and conceal, like I want it to be able to clear and conceal many times over. I don't want to like give it the same message, or a sameness of message.
Yeah, totally.
Or, I mean, as my dad once said, your art is political.
Yes.
I said, no, it's not political.
Right.
And so there, it's really like those,
right.
those two, extremes or opposites, I guess.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, but you would agree your answer to your dad would be, well, my art could be political. Like my art could be taken in any way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Political is right. one of the many ways.
Yeah, yeah. So if he wants to take it that way, that's
yeah,
fine.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I like what you said. I mean, I think when people try to ground your work in a specific representational dictate, yeah. that I think... gets in the way of the clearing, concealing circus that, mm-hmm. that you really actually, that is your artistic intention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. Well, you know, I have to say once again, Heidegger was here in the room and through the absolute magic of this book, we had not read this section.
No.
I didn't know this section was coming, right?
Yeah.
We sit down, we decide to make small talk.
Yeah.
And we talk about art and a gallery.
Yeah.
Neither of us had read this section.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then we start reading it and he says art,
yeah.
and instituting, and he's literally heard us.
Yeah.
And decided to really enlighten us about what we have been doing and what we were talking about mm-hmm. before we even read the book.
Yeah, I mean, I want to read his art lectures now. I feel like...
Yeah, he has a whole book on art. Like, you should check
really,
it out.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think it's like, it feels like a whole new art theory, basically.
It is.
You know, there are all these different movements of art, right?
Yes, yes.
Zombie formalism and like all these cool names. There should be a
zombie formalism.
Yeah, it's like yeah, like,
I've
it's
heard
like
of that.
Movement.
What is it?
I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember. It's a little embarrassing. As
like,
I said it, I was
sounds like most art I see. Yeah, that's great. Yeah,
you know, right now it's very political, right?
Yeah,
or very unpolitical.
Yeah,
art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pish, and you know.
I feel like he could have a movement of art with this.
Well, yeah, I'm sure there's quite a few art theoreticians who are informed by his thinking. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see and read. I mean, yeah, I think something super magical and wild happened this evening. No, I'm just continually impressed at how strange it is. That he ends up talking to us about what we were thinking about before we ever even read what he was going to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Whew.
That's like the reaching, what was it? Reaching out into the future.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that it just underlines, because obviously that's not happening. I mean, I'm not going to engage in magical thinking, but what it actually shows is that the dynamic clearing concealing space that this work generates is so vast that you can kind of talk about anything before you dive into a section and that section ends up talking about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I don't doubt that had we talked about any kind of small talk, we would have found a ton of things in this section to enlighten and inform what we talked about.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's right. Because it's about being and being exactly. And how to be. And exactly. So you're really what talking is
it
about
not,
everything.
What does it not relate to?
Yeah. But I do think there are sections that are more our small talk.
Yes, of course.
More than others. Okay, great. Not to say it's magical. Maybe but just is. That there are some times.
You know what? Let's just let it be magical. Okay. It was okay. A magical evening.
But no, we don't do magical thinking.
Okay, no magical
thinking. It can be a magical evening, though.
It's the ghost of Martin. It's Martin's ghost. Yep. Well, that was great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.